This show is sponsored by Midi Health. There are great things that come with age: wisdom, experience, and knowledge, just to name a few. But if you're a woman over 40, it can also bring some less desirable things like hot flashes, insomnia, brain fog, moodiness, and weight gain, all symptoms of menopause and perimenopause. Yes, hormonal transition is a fact of life, but that doesn't mean you have to accept its symptoms as just another part of aging. Midi clinicians are menopause experts, equipped to support you with safe, effective, FDA-approved medications, as well as supplements, lifestyle coaching, and preventative health guidance. You'll come out of the experience feeling heard and with a plan to start feeling better. Midi offers accessible care. All their services are covered by insurance, and they're conveniently accessible through telehealth visits and 24/7 messaging. You deserve to feel great. Book your virtual visit today at joinmidi.com. That's joinmidi.com.
You're listening to KCBS In-Depth.
Really, in order to find quality care, you often have to be on a wait list that's months long.
The people, places, and issues the Bay Area is talking about.
The aggressive advocates who were looking to overrule Roe for so long, they really had no idea of the consequences they might be opening up.
In this case, there very well may be charges that are appropriate. For example, trying to obstruct an official proceeding of Congress, right? That is unlawful.
This is KCBS In-Depth.
Welcome to KCBS In-Depth, broadcasting throughout the Bay Area and streaming on the Odyssey app. I'm Mary Hughes. We are continuing KCBS's State of San Francisco conversation this week and seeking to answer the question of what will it take to ensure that San Francisco thrives in the years to come? Is it workers returning to offices? Does the city need more financial investment? Or should the focus be on building, or in some cases, rebuilding, the communities and partnerships within the city by the bay? As with last time, KCBS political reporter Doug Sovereign is our host, and he is joined by a panel of guests who are striving to find those answers. Tennis Crosby, executive director of the San Francisco Marin Food Bank. Lori Thomas, executive director of the Golden Gate Restaurant Association. Larry Baer, president, CEO, and part owner of the San Francisco Giants. Brandon Schneider, president and COO of the Golden State Warriors. And Alex Bastian, president and CEO of the Hotel Council of San Francisco.
But Lori, what do you think about downtown? And do we need to embrace new bold ideas, or do we need to do we need to try to focus on getting workers back, or both?
Well, I think it's both. I mean, one of the things I want to mention you guys have heard about is the Vacant to Vibrant program downtown, where we're trying to convince. It's city funded, and also SF New Deal has done a really great job trying to make this work and help bring in folks that don't necessarily have, you know, brick and mortar restaurant experience, but who might have had a food truck or something, and then try to get them in an downtown space that maybe the building owners or landlords wouldn't have considered it before because they don't have the right pedigree financially or whatever. And that has been very successful. I think Simon said like 7 out of the 9 of the first cohort have signed some more long-term leases. They're going to be opening it up in the East Cut going forward. But stuff like this is going to take continued assistance and continued, you know, grants and governments and seeding it. And I think we're all optimistic that we're going to see a recovery closer to 2030. But for our members in the restaurant community, that's too long. We won't have restaurants, you guys. We'll have fast food. And we'll have super expensive, you know, Michelin kind of things, and we'll lose neighborhood restaurants and things like that because it just won't pencil. So I think, much like zoning discussions and everything, I think we all have to stay at the table and say, what does the city want, and who's going to help pay for it, right? Because you can't put that on the backs of small businesses that have, you know, not a lot of financial, especially with this interest rate situation. There's not any affordable stuff. So we all have to work together and say, what do we want? And we have to find a way to fund that.
Tanis, you wanted to weigh in on that?
And what are the choices that we're making to support What are the choices we're making to volunteer? Yes, we've got to make certain that we're creating the policy conditions, but there's also so much we can do as individuals to make those choices and to build the community that we want.
Right. Laura, you mentioned Advance SF earlier, which is a coalition of business leaders, and Larry, you're one of the leaders of that, that launched this ad campaign with the slogan, "It All Starts Here," to remind the world that this has always been a hotbed of innovation. I mean, television was invented a couple blocks from where we used to be, our old headquarters on Green Street, by Philo T. Farnsworth. The personal computer, the laptop, the iPhone, social media, Turkey Tetrazzini, the martini, Green Goddess dressing, they were all invented here. How effective has that campaign been so far? I think it's been maybe, what, 6-7 months? And how will you measure its success?
We think it's been a really good wake-up call both to people here and globally. Because what was happening, and I think it's really been muted, is there's just been this, you know, you talk about Dune Loop or whatever, this view that San Francisco, you know, is a city in sort of, you know, progressive decline. And it's in many ways, a lot of the statistics you've read, I mean, maybe not back to work downtown, but in other ways, San Francisco is emerging as an AI capital and all. And so it all starts here. You know, it was designed by the brilliant people at Goodby Silverstein. Mm-hmm. And like I heart New York, you know, I love New York, this is, kind of a kiss to San Francisco, but it says something, right? Because it all starts here is about innovation. We have innovation economy. What Alex said about the people. I mean, our greatest resource here is our people and the people that are coming off college campuses that want to be in San Francisco and want to be here. So Advance SF, we brought in, interestingly, one of the early meetings and the mayor was with us. We brought in Richard Florida, who is an urban planner, well regarded. And you know, in terms of, and so we're not under any illusions that it's all, that we're gonna snap our fingers, and to Lori's point, that, you know, immediately it's gonna return. What we need to do is in the interim, or you know, over time, is build out, you know, kind of a different downtown. So it is, does have more of a residential mix to it. Arts and culture, and that's starting to happen in the East Cut and some of the areas around Salesforce Park, where there's you know, music and arts activations at the storefront level, and that's being, you know, seeded by City Hall and by other organizations. So those are two pieces that need to happen. Advance SF is basically is working on three things. It's not a political group. There's other groups that are trying to get people elected and get people recalled. You know, we're some of the largest organizations in San Francisco, companies, and our view is essentially three things. You know, reactivate downtown, deal with the income inequality and the middle class issues that you know, allowing the middle class to stay in San Francisco and work on the income inequality, safe streets issues, and then the narrative, and changing the narrative. So there's a lot to do, but the good news is people talk about all these groups and that overlapping. There's, you know, Grow SF and Together SF and Abundant SF and Advance SF. Mm-hmm. It's an alphabet soup. But the other side of that is people really care.
That's right.
And there's a lot of people here that care and are leaning in and they're saying, we want our city to thrive.
And speaking of people caring, I mean, the city has a long history of very generous philanthropists from, you know, the Haases and the Goldmans to the Benioffs and everybody in between. Tanis, how is corporate and personal giving going now as compared to before the pandemic? I mean, I just know organizing a lot of volunteer efforts through my kids' schools and sports teams that it was tough to get people to step up to volunteer during the pandemic, to give money. The economy was doing so well. Has that rebounded? Are people digging deep enough or are we not out of that hole yet?
Well, I want to make one thing abundantly clear. Every dollar that is contributed to San Francisco Marin Food Bank is put to such good use. 96% of everything we receive is out the door dedicated to program. That is incredible efficiency and impact. And we make an incredible difference immediately to work on addressing, you know, very real problems immediately in your community. People are incredibly generous. And yes, people are giving more, but here's where we haven't seen the kind of engagement that we would like. corporate volunteerism has declined significantly. Pre-pandemic, 60% of all of our volunteers were from corporate teams. Mm-hmm. Now it's less than 20%. So we can do a lot with every dollar that is provided to the food bank, and our food bank is powered by people and community, all working together to make this service happen. So it's an invitation. Come, volunteer, go to your restaurant, go to a Giants game, go to a concert. You know, let's make this city the best it can be, and that starts by being active and engaged.
Now, Alex, you've talked about everybody coming together. How big a role does the philanthropic community have to play to be part of that?
You know, I believe in the magic of San Francisco, and the magic starts with all of you. It starts with all of us. And, you know, I think that San Franciscans are very compassionate people. I really do. I think that we're very true to our values. But I think it's very hard to be compassionate when there's no money in your pocket. And what we need to do is we need to work together to put the city first, to help people that need help, of course, but also to help guide our city to a place where it can be profitable again. It could start being good for everyone again, right? And it's going to be incumbent on all of us to balance all of these considerations at the same time. I believe we can walk and chew gum at the same time. We can do both, right? I think that that's what we need now more than ever, right? We need to find a way to, yes, make it a little more business friendly so that businesses want to invest in our city again, right? We need to make it, yes, a little bit more focused on public safety and clean streets so that people come here from around the world again. And we are heading in that direction. That's the good news. The bad news is now more than ever, we need each and every one of you to be engaged also, because each and every one of you makes a world of difference in your neighborhood, in your respective cities, if you don't live in San Francisco, but you live in the Bay Area, right? So that's the good news here. The good news is there is a recipe for success. Yes, the people on these panels are of course very important. We do our part, but each and every one of you is very important. The media is very important. Sure. So if we work together and we put the city first, we're gonna accomplish great things, but it's gonna start from within.
Yeah, and you know, I believe that good ideas can come from anywhere, and you know, Larry, for example, you mentioned I love New York. Growing up in New York in the 70s, that was a dark place. I mean, New York was not, way worse than San Francisco has gotten at any point. And that sort of changed the narrative and the perception, and they built on that campaign. So are there other best practices that you've seen other cities employ successfully, or other organizations in your field maybe that you'd like to see San Francisco try? Things that, oh, hey, look what they're doing in Chicago or Baltimore or wherever. Brandon, is there anything you know that you've seen where you're like, oh, you know, the Phoenix Suns had this great thing, we're going to do that, or anything like that?
I don't know if I'd speak to another city, but just continuing on the philanthropic piece, I think that's really important. You know, we have, I'll speak to a few things that we do and we probably can expand on. Our team members all volunteer. So we'll do one of our organizational OKRs, goals for the year, is tied to community work. So if we're not doing it with you, we should be. But we're talking over 8,000 hours annually just from our team members. Our foundation gave out over $3.5 million last year, most we've ever done. We've done $40 million in impact in the last 10 years, focused on educational equity. So these are like different focuses that we have to make a difference in the near term, but also longer term. Supporting small businesses has been a huge thing for us. We have a program called the Franchise Fund with United Airlines, which is helping minority-owned small businesses get corporate ready so they can get multinational contracts. We have tastemakers at Chase Center. So all the people coming to all the events, 150, 175 events a year, you've got small businesses that get to come in and serve their food. And they're making money based on the commerce they're doing at Chase Center, but it's marketing, right? It's letting people know about these businesses and helping these businesses succeed. So for me, like when we all talk about everyone playing our part, like we all have opportunities to make a difference in the community and really lift up everyone around us. So that's something we are really focused on with the Warriors.
In-depth will return after a moment.
This show is sponsored by Midi Health. There are great things that come with age: wisdom, experience, and knowledge, just to name a few. But if you're a woman over 40, it can also bring some less desirable things like hot flashes, insomnia, brain fog, moodiness, and weight gain, all symptoms of menopause and perimenopause. Yes, hormonal transition is a fact of life, but that doesn't mean you have to accept its symptoms as just another part of aging. MIDI clinicians are menopause experts, equipped to support you with safe, effective, FDA-approved medications, as well as supplements, lifestyle coaching, and preventative health guidance. You'll come out of the experience feeling heard and with a plan to start feeling better. Midi offers accessible care. All their services are covered by insurance, and they're conveniently accessible through telehealth visits and 24/7 messaging. You deserve to feel great. Book your virtual visit today at joinmidi.com. That's join, MIDI.com.
Does anyone want to touch on, you know, ideas that you wish City Hall would try or that another city is doing that we could try?
I want to give credit to Mayor Lyndon Breed for being an advocate for a piece of legislation that we are running with, AB 1967. It matters, and that was a big boom to get your attention, because here's what I want you to be aware of. The state of California leaves $3.6 billion on the table every year. Did you know that? $3.6 billion in funds that are available that we don't access because of administration design for CalFresh. $3.6 million. That economic return in our communities would be over $5 billion. So I want to give credit to San Francisco for consistently innovating around access to this program. But what would it look like if we emulated what other states do for 100% enrollment? Red tape should not get in the way. So I'd like to see us continue to double down on policy that we know works. I'd like to see us to continue to be a leader to make sure that we are doing everything we can to get all of the dollars that our city and that our residents are entitled to. Because those dollars are spent here, it creates benefit, and that's what I would like to see us to continue to do in bold, solutions-oriented ways.
And why isn't that happening? Is it red tape? Is it because people aren't aware of the program? What are the barriers?
California is one of the few states in America that has a decentralized approach. It costs double the amount to administer, and it puts us in the bottom five in all states in America. So this is just an example of how choices and policies and administration can sometimes get in our own way. So yes, we need to do more. We also need to be really smart about what it is we're doing to make sure that we're capturing every dollar that our community is entitled to receive.
So we've talked, go ahead, Larry.
I was just saying that's especially true when it comes to housing and affordable housing and getting housing built, right? Sure. So obviously, with the unhoused community, we've got to have more shelters and spaces built in San Francisco. We're talking about San Francisco. There's also a workforce housing component, right? So actually at Mission Rock, we're doing 40% affordable housing, and a good chunk is workforce, because you can't have a situation where public school teachers, nurses, police, fire are living 2, 3, 4 hour, long drives from where they're teaching or providing nursing services or police and fire. You've got to be able to have that middle class, that group of providers, service providers to the city, be able to afford the city. And housing, getting housing started and getting it moving. And I think we are moving in the right direction in that, but that bureaucracy has got to be untangled.
You've talked a little bit about, the economic disparity. There's been a real push to raise wages, but at the same time, people complain about inflation and how everything costs more. And when employers have to pay their workers more, then they have to raise prices. So the two kind of go hand in hand. Lori, how do we strike a balance there? And has the impact of those higher wages been a net positive in the restaurant business or a net negative?
Policy, in my experience, is always usually well-intended. There are smart people on all sides. What happens is sometimes there's unintended negative consequences that people don't think about.
Right.
So, for example, minimum wage in San Francisco is one of the better ones in the US. It's at $18.07 an hour and goes up to $18.87 an hour July 1st. If you look at where that was before the pandemic, it was 25% less. It's tied to a simple CPI. Then you look at the healthcare security ordinance, where in San Francisco we did some stuff 25 years ago we might want to take another look at. That's also gone up 25%. So the good news is people are making more money. The bad news is things are more expensive unless people spend the money, right? We all feel that ourselves. We feel that. My husband and I went out to dinner at a place last Friday night, we were like, oh my God, I can't believe what we just spent. And I was well behaved. I mean, we didn't even order a bottle of wine. I was well behaved. Those who know me, I had 3 glasses of wine. That was it. And it was still expensive, right? It was, and I have a job, right? So you guys are going to pay more to dine out, and the restaurants are going to keep less. There's going to be some stuff coming up about service charges and what happens. That's going to put a lot of stress on our restaurant community. We're very worried about that. So it's a trade-off, guys. So it's a stress point. PG&E raised their rates. They passed that through significantly. Mm-hmm. SFPUC raised their rates 9% each year. Recology has done a better job, but has still had to raise their rates. These are monopolies, basically. We have no choice. The food costs have gone up 25 to 30%. It's really rough, and private small businesses, when they don't make money, they're not in the business of charity, right? They close. So that is our concern and our constant struggle. So not to be negative, but if you're gonna help the businesses, you're just gonna have to pony it up and spend money because it's gonna get more expensive.
And some of these costs, I guess we pass on to the tourists.
Oh yeah.
Hotel rooms, for example.
Yeah.
Technology, biotech, healthcare, obviously major drivers of our local economy, but tourism is a huge piece of it, as we all know. And I know visitors from China have dropped since COVID, but how bright is the outlook for a broader recovery, Alex, for the tourism trade?
I think we have to look at this through the short term, medium term, and long term. In the short term, we have unprecedented challenges. We have very high interest rates, which means that the hotels have to pay a very large amount every month to keep the lights on. In fact, keeping the lights on is very expensive because Lori just touched on energy prices. They've doubled, right? We have increased insurance prices. In fact, when we talk about inflation, we're talking about 30% inflation. It's hit the workers. It's also hit the businesses alike, right? And so when we look at the landscape, the reality is that a majority of the hotels are losing money, right? We're talking about literally all these costs that are very high. And you know, the workers that I talk to, what really impacts me is when they say, Alex, when are the visitors gonna come back to the city again? I'm only working 10 days a month. I'm only working 11 days a month. You know, I make a good living in the hospitality world, but I'm only working 11 days right now. Pre-pandemic, I used to work every day, right? So what we need to do in the short term is we need to work together and figure this out. Right? Workers, the industry, all of us as San Franciscans, we need to put the city first. And we're gonna have to make some difficult, challenging decisions, right? And we will do that. We will do that collectively. We have to be adult-like, we have to be objective, and we will get there. But in the short term, we have to overcome these hurdles and challenges. The great news is in the medium term and in the long term, because we are continuing to clean the city and keep it safe, and we're making it a little bit more business friendly, we're gonna be able to shine bright on the world stage again. What I always tell people is this city is a piece of gold. And that piece of gold is a little bit covered in mud right now. Part of it is our own doing, right? Part of it is the pandemic, and part of it is this national mudslinging we're seeing on the national news media circuit. But if you clean that piece of gold, if you keep it safe, if you hold it up in that light, right there in the chandelier, it's gonna shine bright on the world stage again. And that's gonna be up to all of us to do. We have a great investment, we have a great city, and you know, I implore all of you, if you haven't done it, get on a cable car, drive across the Golden Gate Bridge. Do what most people do on a sunny day in San Francisco. Walk around and enjoy the scenery and fall in love with our city again. You will leave your heart here once again.
Well said, Alex. I'd actually like to close by because we're almost out of time, by asking each of you to give us something positive, something you think is going right in San Francisco or is a real bright spot that, yeah, maybe the gloomy headline writers have overlooked. If only they could see the real San Francisco, take a stroll along Crissy Field, whatever it is. What would that be, whether it's physical or social, something that you, if you could show an out-of-towner or the national media and say, this is what you're missing, what would that be? I mean, we could just go down, we can start with Tanis.
I love this city. I love this city. It is the most beautiful city in the world. I count myself so fortunate to be part of this city's fabric and community. And when I see hearts in action, making sure that people are cared for, I believe anything is possible in San Francisco.
Lori?
I do think there's lots of amazing new restaurants that have taken the brave chance and have opened. Many in Chinatown, many in our neighborhoods. Union Square has had new restaurants. So I think when you get a chance to look at some of the roundups that are out there with the press and go try some of those new restaurants, there is really good food still happening, whether it's high-end, low-end, in the middle. So I think that's super encouraging and something that, you know, we should all continue to try every once in a while, because we do have super high quality cuisine and chefs and experiences.
Larry?
So born and raised here in San Francisco, fourth generation, lived back east for a decade or so. And I grew up with, my dad would take me on the bus to Candlestick. Mm. And we'd watch the Giants play at Candlestick. And it was a dream to me. Right? It was like Candlestick's the most beautiful place in the world. They play baseball there. The grass is green and Willie Mays and Willie McCovey. And then, so fast forward a few years to 2 days ago, Sunday. 1 o'clock game, Giants and Pirates. And it was just a wonderful scene, right? And it's not just about baseball, because this is about any events or any sort of coming together. It's like the human connection. And you know, mothers and sons and fathers and daughters and grandparents and people streaming up 2nd Street, 3rd Street, getting off the end Judah, coming by boat, coming by rollerblade, coming by bicycle, enjoying the new park over in Mission Rock, China Basin Park, playing catch with, you know, kids playing catch or with fathers and mothers playing catch. And in that environment, I think is uniquely San Francisco. And we have something we sometimes forget about is, take away Oracle Park, the park system. We have the most beautiful parks here in open space in any urban environment this size. We're a postage stamp, right? We're 49 square miles, 7 by 7. And we have beautiful parks that people enjoy with dogs and frisbees and kites. And so, your point, Doug, about stepping back a little bit and realizing what we have here and the natural beauty and the joy that we have, and it's really just doubling down on being advocates for San Francisco in all ways, and especially with, you know, community partnerships.
Brandon?
Yes, for one thing, Larry. I think that was more than one thing. I grew up going to Candlestick Park too, but for me it was Will Clark, Kevin Mitchell.
Yeah, I know. It's a little bit different.
My dad tells me about Willie Mays. So here's, I'm gonna cheat too. When we were building Chase Center, the architects would ask us, what do you want Chase Center to be known for? Like, what's gonna be the signature piece of Chase Center? And my answer was, and honestly, I would talk about the ballpark, because I grew up, I mean, you know, Pac Bell, all the different, you know, Oracle Park now. Yeah. And if you ask people what's the best part, you're going to get a lot of different answers, right, of why people love going there. And that's what we wanted. I wanted Chase Center to be. We wanted to have something for everyone. Whether you're sitting in the front row or the last row of the building, you have a great experience. And hopefully we've achieved that. I would say the same thing about San Francisco. You guys all gave your answer. Alex is going to give his answer. We could go around, you know, and you guys would all have different answers. The bridge, all the different things that we have here. That's, to me, what makes it so special. When you think about living here in the Bay Area, in San Francisco specifically, all the different things you get to do compared to anywhere else you could live, that's why we all live here. This is the greatest city in the world to live, and we just can't lose sight of that.
Alex, I'll give you the last word.
You know, the thing that really is, in my opinion, amazing about San Francisco are San Franciscans. We are a unique breed. We are a very proud breed. We very much are passionate about our city. We go too far at times, yes. But we are very much in love with our city. We want the best for our city. We are engaging in civic pride again. And when we do that, we're unstoppable.
Well, thank you all. We hope this conversation has been enlightening and informative and helped focus us on the road ahead, the road back. I'd like to thank all of our panelists for contributing. Alex Bastian, Brandon Schneider, Larry Bear, Lori Thomas, Tanis Crosby, thank you so much. And thank you all for being here.
You can find this episode and all episodes of In Depth online at kcbsradio.com. You can also hear In Depth episodes on the Odyssey app. download the app on your smartphone and favorite KCBS radio. Thanks for listening for KCBS and In Depth. I'm Mary Hughes.
You've been listening to KCBS In Depth. Get every episode by subscribing on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and other podcast platforms. Visit kcbsradio.com for more news and interviews. We are the Bay Area's news station, KCBS.